This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot is the author of the new book, I've Known Rivers, about the African-American middle class, the class she was born into. Her father was a sociologist, her mother a psychologist and pediatrician. Lawrence Lightfoot wrote this book to challenge the assumptions made by sociologist E. Franklin Frazier in his influential 1957 book, Black Bourgeoisie. Frazier said the black middle class turned its back on its roots and was living in a cultural vacuum. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot's new book features extensive interviews with six middle-aged middle-class people. Lawrence Lightfoot is a professor of education at Harvard, a recipient of a MacArthur Award, and the author of a biography of her mother called Balm in Gilead. The first time she heard about E. Franklin Frazier was 30 years ago, when her family and her parents' friends were sitting around the kitchen table.
My father started a conversation among his friends and colleagues. Many of them would have been considered at the time the black intelligentsia. And he said, "What do you all think about E. Franklin Frazier's new book, Black Bourgeoisie?" And my first response to that was one of total intrigue, just at the title, at the contrariness of those two words carried in that title. Because this was at a time when my maternal grandparents, who were also around the table and lived with us, were insisting upon calling us colored. And when my parents hated the term colored and were calling us Negroes, and when a whole sort of defiant, emerging left radical group was beginning to call us black, no one was calling us African American at all. And black sounded bold and aggressive, abrasive even, against this, the French lyricism carried in this word, bourgeois. And so I was totally intrigued. But more intriguing was the conversation that followed, which was charged and heated and vigorous among these social scientists and social activists talking about this work. And I picked up, even as a young adolescent, that there was something both very true and very false about this work.
One of the ideas that E. Franklin Frazier expressed in his book, Black Bourgeoisie, was that the black middle class was assimilationist, that they became middle class by turning their back on their roots. Now, did you find any evidence of that among the middle class people who you interviewed?
Well, I would say that there were moments in their lives when they were in the ascent, as it were, when they were making the journey, when they each found it necessary to at some point relinquish some of the connections to their roots, or, as Katie Cannon would put it, make the great escape. But I think really, and this is particularly true, I mean, obviously, for those from backgrounds of poverty. But I think that one of the fascinating things about these stories, these life stories, is that they talk about the ways, the variety of ways, sometimes invisible to everyone else, of giving forward, of being activist in the community. Sometimes it's through great scientific discovery, differently conceived, differently expressed and represented, as it is in Tony Earls, who is an epidemiologist and psychiatrist who studies criminality and violence.
You thought that each of the people who you interviewed for your book became blacker as they matured. How was that expressed?
Well, I think that's related to what I was just talking about. I think that one of the ways in which we as black folks can feel more comfortable about negotiating the worlds that we negotiate, and many of them predominantly white, is to be more certain about our roots, to be more certain about who we are, and not feel ambivalently about that, not need even to shout about it or to be abrasive about it. And I think in each of these cases, if you look across these life stories, you see the development of a racial identity that is firmer and clearer and less ambivalent.
You went to a predominantly white school. Did you also grow up in a predominantly white neighborhood?
I grew up in a very odd community that was predominantly white. It was, in fact, an intentionally cooperative community. My father had been a conscientious objector during the war and had been a pacifist. Both my parents were pacifist, and many of them wanted to join together in a community that was intentionally inclusive and began this very strange, very wonderful cooperative community called Skyview Acres. And so I grew up in this place which was very sort of political and socially political, somewhat leftist, in the middle of the country.
Now, and how did your parents feel about you going to a predominantly white school?
They felt fine about that. There was enough, I think they felt, enough blackness and what I really refer to as a very African-American curriculum going on around our family table and in our lives, so that I think they really thought that their children were being exposed both to black culture and black roots and black literature and black history and black folks, as well as learning how to move in the white world successfully. And so I think they were teaching us very much the duality of that experience. They had, of course, grown up in segregated schools in the Deep South, in Mississippi. But come north, my father had gone to a predominantly black college, men's college called Morehouse College in Atlanta, where he had met all of these wonderful, wonderful intellectuals and social activists like Du Bois. But my mother had gone to Cornell University and been the only black undergraduate at the time, and had found that experience to be deeply isolating and lonely and painful. But we had both examples within our family of a father who had, in fact, until graduate school, which he did at Columbia University, this mostly black experience, and my mother who had had this very black early experience, and then a wholly token experience. And I think they recognized that they wanted their children to be able to do both well, feel comfortable and thrive in both kinds of environments, and be able to move across those boundaries as gracefully as possible.
Was there a point in your life where your mother started telling you part of her story to prepare you what she feared you'd be up against as you started to pursue a professional life?
All the time. I mean, in other words, my parents, both of them, brought home stories of their work lives, unvarnished often, in which they would tell stories, often including stories of race, oppression, prejudice, bias, and we would listen to these stories and talk about them. So I remember early on these being very somewhat confusing, very complicated conversations about race and about oppression, about prejudice, and about one's response to those things.
My guest is Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. Her new book about the black middle class is called I've Known Rivers. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot. When you were growing up, your mother worked, and this was at a time when most women didn't. How did you feel about her being gone?
It seemed very natural that my mother should work, although I began to notice that other mothers didn't work and were home and were there to take the brownies to their fly-up ceremonies and their meetings and so forth. I very much resented the time when my mother was supposed to be with us on a Saturday planting pansies in the garden, when she would have to respond to children who were sick in emergency and would leave us stranded in the garden, you know, the pansies half planted or the bread half made, and fly off in order to attend to these other children. That was very, very complicated and very difficult for me. And I was the kind of child who always spoke up about it, always expressed my rage and my anger, and my mother then had to face that upon her return.
Boy, I wonder how you feel about that now.
Well, yeah. I'm doing it, right? It's you know, you would need to talk to my children to, again, experience what they think of as these momentary abandonments and what they do with those.
So do you get these flashbacks?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My mother always wore a cape, and I often wear capes. And my feeling sometimes as I sweep out of the house in my cape is of watching my mother's cape disappear as well. So it feels like the echoes are very resounding in my own life.
As someone who's from a long line of middle-class African-Americans, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this issue. I know that some people who are African-American middle-class people have felt that if you're middle-class, your blackness might be challenged. You know, that so much of what is considered black now is defined by poverty, right?
I mean, not for me.
Yeah, so did you feel like you were ever being challenged as being, you know, not black enough because you were from this line of middle class families?
Well, certainly during the Black Power movement days, that is the late 60s, the early 70s, when I was a young adolescent young adult, late adolescent, trying to really discover, as all people are doing developmentally, discover my identity, I certainly felt challenged by that notion. And there was a lot of, you know, blacker than thou talk, and a lot of worry within me that I wasn't being black enough. But that notion now doesn't disturb me at all. I feel not challenged by it. I am quite clear about my identity and know where I come from.
Is this an issue you investigated in your book?
It certainly is part of all of those stories to a certain extent. I mean, it isn't that race is the only shaper of these realities at all. There are lots of other shapers. We mentioned one earlier. That is, for the people from poverty, social class stands as a very, very powerful piece of their reality, and it still does. Tony Shizler, for example, who is now studying to become, has become by now, an ordained Episcopal priest, was a former nun and a research chemist, actually, but comes from a background of actually homelessness early on. Her mother was raped, and she was the product of a rape, and they lived a very fragile existence. And she was sent to a convent school for sort of protection from the streets, and emerged as a very, very disciplined scholar and a thoughtful young scientist, and emerged absolutely devoted to Catholicism and to the sanctity and piety of the Catholic Church. The first time she cries in our interview is not about race, but is about class. Her memories of the humiliation of being impoverished, her memories of going to this convent school that was mostly filled with middle-class, bourgeois, young girls, and where they had to wear uniforms, and where each of these young girls had seven white blouses, store-bought white blouses, to go under their blue uniforms. And Toni Shizler remembers that they didn't have any money to buy the blouses, and her mother made her three white blouses that she turned over each day, which probably no one noticed underneath those blue uniforms. But what she lives with still today is this feeling of humiliation at being not able to buy those blouses and feeling just poor and diminished in the presence of those girls. And she lives today with closets full of blouses in all extraordinary colors, rich colors, white and many, many more, as a response to this early feeling of being diminished.
Do you think that people who are from middle-class families feel more secure in their middle-classness than people who changed class and became middle-class? Do they feel more vulnerable, that they can slip back into poverty at some point in their life?
I think some do, and I think that that continues to be a powerful legacy. I'm not sure whether it's about slipping back into poverty or whether it's really that these early primal feelings of impoverishment don't just rise up as difficult and painful echoes, even as they are secure in their middle-class status.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
I'm glad to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot is the author of I've Known Rivers. She's a professor of education at Harvard. This is Fresh Air.